Good evening. I'd like to call the March 15th meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature to order. Please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. Roll call of members.
Ms. Jock?
I'm here.
Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
Ms. Mankasy?
Present.
Mrs. McBean Clairborn? Mr. McKenna?
Present.
Mr. Proto?
Here.
Ms. Pryor?
Here.
Mr. Robison?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa? Mr. Stein?
Here.
Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
13 members present.
Proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desks.
I'd like to ask for an executive session tonight to talk about negotiations. And now we move to privilege of the floor for the public. Are there any members of the public who would like to address the legislature? Nobody signed up? Okay. All right, thank you. I don't see any municipal officials out there either. Okay. Legislative privilege of the floor. I'd first like to start with Carol Chalk.
I have a distinguished youth awardee to present to you, Cody Austin Aceto, who is here with, coming up, with Jen Handy from the Ithaca Youth Bureau. And our spokes going to come up, Susan Austin and Harry Aceto. If you'd like to come up, stand behind your son, you may. You don't have to. Hi, Cody. This is Cody Austin Aceto. He's a student at LACS. I'm dating myself. He was nominated by both a volunteer and by Jen Handy, who's the program coordinator at the Ithaca Youth Council. We've had other awardees from the Ithaca Youth Council, and so to refresh our memories, this dynamic group gives a voice to youth on current issues. They meet with community leaders, advocate about opportunities for youth in the community, and develop future leaders. It's a collaborative effort between the Ithaca Youth Bureau, GIAC, and Southside, if I got that right. And the nomination for Cody cited his work on the Youth Council as particularly exemplary. The nomination particularly highlighted Cody's community service project, which I liked, for the Finger Lakes Reuse E-Center, in which he organized teens from throughout the county. They learned about the importance of reducing the amount of hazardous waste entering our landfill. And he had a whole group of teens who dismantled computers and electronics for recycling. They did intricate work taking apart, it turned out, hundreds of components, 100 printers, 40 monitors, and 5 computers, all in one day. It just shows what you can do when you harness the power of youth. Cody serves as an active representative to the Youth Leadership Training Series, which involves youth from diverse backgrounds and very different levels of community involvement, who come from very different levels of community involvement, from those who are highly active to those who haven't yet discovered the rewards of being involved. Cody participated in IY Connect, Ithaca Youth Connect, I assume that stands for, in a pairing with the Ithaca High Principal Don Mills. This effort pairs Ithaca Youth Council members with specific community leaders to advocate for youth, to share opinion, and to learn more about specific community initiatives. So we might be getting calls to participate in this in the future, I would assume, and it sounds like a lively and meaningful thing to do. Cody's also involved in the 2010-2000 theme for the Youth Council of Healthy Youth, in which the council is addressing issues ranging from physical fitness to stress reduction. Cody, that struck me from his nomination, tackled the difficult question of how do you talk to youth about drug and alcohol issues where he notably kept emphasizing the importance of making sure youth knew they have a voice to engage with the issue, which I think is going to be really key to helping to stem the tide. Those are the activities that were highlighted in the nomination. What caught my eye, Cody, about your nomination was the description of the attitude you bring to these activities and to the Youth Council in general. In this era of cynicism and extreme cool, Cody was cited as inspiring the teens around him with his upbeat perspective, his enthusiasm, and optimism. And boy, if there's anything that we need to counter what's going on in the world today, that's, I think, is really key. Cody was cited as combining an ability to facilitate complex discussions with the willingness to put in the hard work and motivated effort outside of meetings for the aims he wants to achieve, and that's also, I think, key. So, Cody, we really thank you for your service. We invite you to learn about county issues. And then I also, and I have some goodies for you that I will give you in a minute. I also want to recognize your parents, Susan Austern and Harry Aceto. As a parent of four myself, I know that we can't force our kids to be motivated, but I'm sure you played a role. And it isn't always easy to both guide our kids but also to let them take the ball and run with it. And from the difficulty I had connecting with Cody because he was too busy to talk to me, running from meeting to meeting and activity to activity, I know, thank you for being there to encourage and support Cody's efforts and for all you do yourselves to create community spirit that we have here in Tompkins County. So thanks to you both. I'm going to offer Jen Handy first the opportunity to say a few words about Cody and then Cody himself. Thanks, Jen.
Thanks. I'm Jen Handy, and I work with the youth on the Ithaca Youth Council. And one of the great things about my job is I usually get to push the teens in front of the mic, so I often don't have to do this. So bear with me. Cody is a joy to work with. I find myself, after long days, just being tired, and sometimes politics and government issues are a little tiring, I'm sure you might know, but after talking to him, just having a whole new enthusiasm for it, to be able to look at it with fresh eyes, and that inspiration goes beyond teens to really inspire staff and to inspire me to keep working hard. Many things set him apart from the crowd, but one day Cody came to me and said, "Jen, I don't really feel comfortable just asking someone for something or writing grants." And I was like, "Okay." He's like, "So I want to do it." I was like, "Oh, okay. I thought you were going to try and get out of something." So normally that's a reaction, that we don't feel comfortable or we don't feel prepared and we want to run away. But he said, "I'm going to seek out that option." And he submitted a grant at 5 p.m. today. And so just that willingness to take something scary and a learning opportunity and seek it out rather than run away from it is inspirational to us all. Last week at a press conference, one other youth council member proposed the question, "How can someone believe in their self and their future if they feel like no one is standing behind them?" This is a wonderful award, and I'm glad to see the county recognizing the great work of the youth throughout Tompkins County. And thank you for all that you do to make sure that teens in this area feel valued and like they are never standing alone. Thanks.
I want to thank you all for choosing me for this award. I'm very excited to see this recognition go to Youth Council. Together, we work to advocate for our peers and to help the youth of our community find their voice. Currently, we are working on several projects to improve the lives of the youth in our community. One such project is a survey to determine students' opinions on the education budget. And we are also working to pair younger students with high schoolers and college kids on buddy runs to encourage fitness. I promise to continue working as hard as I can to help my peers in our community achieve their goals and break down the barriers that stand between them and success. Thank you.
Thanks to you, Jen, for all that you do all year with all of the kids. Cody, I have this, and thanks to you for your speech, Cody. I have a plaque for you. It reads, "Tompkins County Distinguished Youth Award, presented to Cody Austern-Aceto, In recognition of your outstanding commitment to your community, March 2011, and the award is sponsored by Bangs Ambulance Service, the Tompkins County Legislature, Cayuga Radio Group, A&B Awards and Engraving, and Purity Ice Cream. So, the goodies in the, so here's your plaque, and then among the goodies in your bag here, we have emergency kit and a certificate for Purity Ice Cream. So don't go too overboard at once. And thanks for coming, and thanks for all the work
you do so much.
Year. Okay.
Thank you very much, Carol. Any other legislators? Privilege of the floor. Jim, and then Carol.
Did you already do the public?
What?
Did you already do the public?
Or? Yeah, they were real quiet.
Oh, all right. I know there may be more serious things to come after me about this, but I've been asked by someone to talk about something called a play called Fat Pig, and you can take that any way you want to. It's presented by the Reader's Theater, and it's a staged readings of this thing called the Fat Pig by a man named Neil LaBute, and it is featuring people named Maza Gibson, Amin Omari, Tim Perry, Abby J. Smith. And the reason I'm announcing this is that the stage direction is by our own Peter Stein, and the play is directed by Anne-Marie Cummings, who I believe many people know. And it will be held March 18th through the 20th at Buffalo Street Books. Right? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Carol?
Yeah. After I had picked Cody, and as I called the Youth Bureau, I found out that today, and I didn't want to detract from the presentation of the award, but I did want to note that it turned out I wasn't sure if we were going to have anybody here from the Youth Bureau, because today it turned out to be their lobbying day in Albany because of the proposed 50% cuts across the state to Youth Bureau budgets. So I just wanted to note that, and I don't know. I know they've weighed in. And then I just couldn't let tonight pass without mentioning how my heart goes out to the people of Japan. The devastation is horrible in spite of excellent preparedness. And I want to mention energy policy briefly in light of this, the new information we have about risk. I don't know what madness led to building nuclear power plants in a major fault zone. I want to note that other nations, Germany and France, most notably among them, are calling for a reexamination of existing plants, a reevaluation of new plans, and a reevaluation in some cases of the whole concept of redundancy of backups that should work regardless of the situation. And I am so embarrassed that the U.S. is not feeling the need to reexamine. No, we're not. Instead, we've rushed to declare that we'll continue to include expansion of nuclear as a major energy source for our future. I think it's $36 billion is in the upcoming budget proposal. And we've announced that we're just not going to stop to even think about that as a policy. And I just don't know what madness has led the U.S. to continuing that such an expansion without stopping to examine the new information we now all have about risks. Thank you.
Thank you, Carol. Pat.
I just want to thank Carol for mentioning the terrible time that the people of Japan are having at this point, and say that I share those feelings very much. Another concern that I have had in recent weeks that I want to say something about here tonight has to do with the recent legislation that was passed out in Wisconsin and places, other states, Ohio, other places that are considering taking away bargaining rights from public employees. And I haven't thought about this in a long time, but it's called to mind for me my early days as my first job as a public employee was when I started teaching in 1962. And I had just graduated from college and got a teaching job in a small community here in Tompkins County, which had a very good school system, a good reputation for their school system at that time. And it was, in fact, I think, a very good school system. I was very bright-eyed and happy and taught in the elementary school, and I was just as pleased as could be to be making slightly over $4,000 that year for my entire salary for the year. That salary seemed, you know, I just didn't question it at that time, even though as I talked to other teachers who had been around a lot longer than I had about the fact that other people who had gone to 4 years of college in different fields and were graduating with a bachelor's degree were making three, four, five times as much as teachers were making at that time. That it was not unusual that teachers, it was just expected that teachers, in that case, many teachers, especially in the elementary school, were women. And the thought was, well, we didn't really need to make very much because ours was a second income. And, you know, that was just accepted. When I went for my interview for my first job, the person that interviewed me asked me what my marital status was and what my family plans were when he found out that I was married and, you know, how soon I planned on having children because that would impact on whether or not I would be able to get a job. Now, there were certainly male teachers, particularly at the high school level, but there still was a profession that was far more dominated by women than by men, and often you had an elementary school full of women teachers with a male principal. That was not an unusual configuration at that time. When we first started to sit down and bargain collectively with our district, it was considered unusual. And one of the things that they used to say is, well, you know, you really shouldn't try to do this. You don't want to act like a union because you're professionals. And as professionals, you know, that should be beneath you to be behaving like people that belong to unions. And since the communities really were having a difficult time coming up with the money to pay teachers what we thought would be an adequate salary given our education and our experience and so on, we were told that we would be given deferred compensation in the form of a pension. And so the pension system was set up to provide what we termed at that time deferred compensation. So there's a whole lot of history to the collective bargaining picture for public employees that I think has not been brought out in all of the hysteria that's been taking place in the media and all the claims. People are making claims about public employees and collective bargaining that they weren't even around when this whole system started, and they have no idea why it developed the way it did, and it disturbs me greatly. I also just want to say that I think it's a shame the way public employees are being denigrated in this whole discussion, that I have tremendous respect for our public employees here in the county, for public employees in the city where I worked before I came here, and for public employees across New York State and across the United States who perform services every day of every week and most often in a very exemplary way. Whether it's the firefighters or the police officers that put their life on the line, or the teachers in our classrooms, or the sanitation workers who collect our garbage. These people are part of the fabric of our community, and they do a wonderful job, and I just want to give them the credit that I think they're due. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Pat. Brian, then Mike.
I just wanted to remind the folks out in my area that today is also a local election. And as you can see, I did vote. I think we are the only jurisdiction that had a contest, which is sad. Actually, we don't even have a contest for mayor. As you remember, Jeff Ebner, who came here and spoke before us last year, is doing a fine job, and he's going to continue. We do have three people for two spots as village trustees. Polls are open until 9, and if you can, try to get out and then go to those village elections. Their governing situation isn't going to be a whole lot better than ours, so it's important that people get out there. Mm-hmm. So, thanks.
Thank you, Brian. I have a feeling you stole Mike's thunder. No? Are you going to say something, Mike?
Well, we always talk about village elections, but Brian's right. This year we don't have many contested elections. Mm-hmm. Actually, I wanted to say I agree with Carol about what's happened in Japan and the question about nuclear energy to generate power and how that's being looked at in this country. And I have to think back and say thank you to Dooley Kiefer for her efforts many years ago, which raised questions about whether or not we should have Cayuga Station built on Cayuga Lake. And that station was never built. And I'm sort of glad we don't have an aging nuclear reactor on Cayuga Lake right now. That was, what, 30 years ago, Dooley? That happened. So thanks for that. But what I really wanted to say tonight was, well, there they go again in Albany. Prosecutors are out with indictments for a New York State senator, a Democratic New York State senator, and a Democratic New York State assemblyman. Apparently have been, according to the prosecutor, siphoning off some dollars from public programs or to get support of public programs. And the prosecutors in the account I read said, we keep sending the message that if they do wrong, we're going to prosecute them, but they don't seem to be understanding that. And they aren't reforming their ethical requirements at the New York State Legislature. There are ethics bills out there that should be taken up and voted on, and this kind of nonsense needs to stop. I hope folks will contact their state New York State senators and assembly people and tell them that we need these kind of reforms and stop playing games.
Thank you, Mike. Will? Nathan?
Thank you, Barbara. I want to thank Pat for reminding us the critical importance of our public employees who have been under an assault in ways I've never seen in my life, and I think we all need to speak in their defense. And I want to thank Carol for reminding us the absurdity of our continuing devotion to this very, very dangerous system of generating power through nuclear energy. This time of year is important to me because about 33 years ago, our daughter Kendra was born, and she was literally only a week or two old when the accident at Three Mile Island took place, and we were suddenly faced with the prospect of what do you do if there's a massive spread of fallout through a very large geographic area that, from what we understood, could actually have included Ithaca. So we, while many people were not paying attention to the thing or dismissing it as far away, we had our car packed, we had money out of the bank, we were trying to figure out which way do you drive with a young child if need be. Fortunately, they got it under control, and we didn't have to make that trip. But the unfortunate thing is that we have continued to do this kind of power, and it turned out another 10 years later with a horrific accident in Chernobyl, and now this, which, from everything I'm reading, is very much still going. It is not under control. There is not only the problem of a potential of but they believe partial meltdowns, they really don't know. But also, something I learned today, and I guess it was reported in the New York Times, the fact that they are storing spent fuel above the actual containment vessels, and that these are not being properly, they have no way, essentially, to keep these cooled, and these have a potential for releasing great amounts of radiation. So please pay attention. Please consider sending contributions to through good sources to Japan, because they need our support and our prayers. But please also think about the policies for this country, because this is something that's going to continue to haunt us if we don't get it under control. Thank you.
Thank you, Will. Nathan.
Yes. I'm not going to echo everything that people have said about public workers in Japan, but I thank you all for bringing that up. But I did actually want to talk about different angles of those issues, which is that, you know, in Japan, I find it quite remarkable how calm the Japanese people have been despite this enormous tragedy. And it shows really how having a strong government that's effective that has resources provided to it can and investing in emergency response infrastructure really can make a difference. I mean, in some cases, people had 30-minute warning before the tsunami hit, and that 30 minutes, I mean that saved tens of thousands of lives. And so it also gives us an opportunity to think about what type of emergency response system we have, not only in the United States but in this county. And can we respond? You know, and do we have? Can we respond in a right way? And can we give warning to our own citizens? Do we have the infrastructure to do that in a fast way? One of the things I was listening to NPR on my way in. Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize for being late. I had my 3 hours of budget meetings at the hospital. It turned out to be 3.5 hours of budget meetings. So, but I'm done with them. Now I'm ready for the county. Woo. But I, on my way, I was listening to NPR. They also talked about Crescent City, California, and how Crescent City, California had been hit by something like 30 tsunamis in the past 80 years, right? And that they have, after 1964, there was a big tsunami that hit, and so they developed a whole system to actually give warning to boats before it happened, and so many boats went into the Humboldt Bay and were saved. I think one sailor lost his life, and something like 30 boats went down still, despite that. But it's pretty, you know, it shows the importance of having these emergency response systems. One of the interesting findings was that there's a scientist that was saying that if the tsunami had struck 6 hours earlier or 18 hours later, it would have been in high tide, it hit in low tide, and the destruction in California could have been quite huge. So these issues are close to home for us. Now, the other thing I wanted to mention is issues on with some fracking things. I've posted on, if you're a fan of Nathan Shinagawa on Facebook, you will see that I posted a couple articles about how the official that during the Bush administration that wrote the EPA report that basically said that fracking was safe, right? He actually has come out recently. It was in the Daily Coast, and I posted that on my Facebook page. He actually came out saying that fracking deserves thorough examination, and that report was merely meant to be a snapshot, and it was only supposed to talk about fracking up to that point. But he has serious concerns about it, and that he believes that we should continue to study this, and that report should by no means be used by the industry to say that fracking is safe, like it has. And so please check that out. I think that's pretty telling that this Bush official is coming out saying that, former Bush official. And then finally, I know Senator Casey, I believe, came out with a bill called FARC, Frack Bill, which actually would get fracking covered under the Safe Drinking Water Act. And there's an article in the Pittsburgh, what's the newspaper in Pittsburgh? Gazette or something.
Pittsburgh Gazette.
Yes, Pittsburgh Gazette. And I'll also post that on my page as well. All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Nathan. Anyone else? Carol?
Sorry, just a quick announcement. Anybody here who got particularly interested in the stuff I talked about last time about the TCOG assessment work group, discussion about the secondary mortgage market and residential lending. Greg May, the vice president for the residential lending at the trust company, went on from that discussion to create a PowerPoint presentation that he gave and discussion at the Tompkins Cortland Home Builders Association whole day of presentations, and he's going to come back on this coming Monday and give that or shortened form of that to this group. We're going to talk a little bit more about this whole, the whole implications of what the implications can be for residential lending in the secondary mortgage market. That's 10:30 a.m. on this Monday, March 21st. This isn't a big public meeting. This is at our assessment department conference room, which is kind of small. But if any of you are interested in hearing more about that, that's an opportunity to do so.
All right. Thank you very much. All done? Okay. Thanks, Anita and Steve. Delayed to welcome our personnel department for a presentation about their work this year. Thanks very much for coming. I believe you have these in your red folders. So follow along.
Good evening, and thank you for having us. I'm Anita Fitzpatrick, Commissioner of Personnel. Steve Estes, Deputy Commissioner of Personnel. And we appreciate the opportunity to come and speak to you tonight about the core programs that are going on in the personnel department and also goals and objectives that we have for the future. So as a starting point, we wanted to outline the major areas. There are seven staff in the department, but the number of functions are very broad in terms of human resource management and civil service administration. And they include our labor relations and our benefits administration, staff development and training, and payroll. Payroll is a big component in conjunction and coordination with the finance department. Personnel and finance both work together to produce the payroll and the associated work to the payroll system. I don't know if you can see that, but Tompkins County personnel has oversight for all of the county departments, as well as for all of the school districts outside of the city of Ithaca, and three of the special school districts being BOCES. What is that? Sorry, three special districts and BOCES and TC3. We also handle civil service and some resource management and human resources for the Tompkins County Library. There are also 16 local government entities that we work with and coordinate with in the area of civil service, classifying positions, creating job descriptions, recruitment, accepting applications, conducting their testing process, tracking their appointments both for the legal requirements and the protection of both the entities and the employees to make sure that they're all compliant with civil service. In terms of labor relations, we do the collective bargaining for the county, and we have four bargaining units. The payroll for the county is $38 million. In addition to that, there are two other groups that are non-collective bargaining, and one is management, and that's approximately 80 employees, and also the confidentials, which are about another 22 employees. And we also manage the grievance and disciplinary process. I would just take you to the last, it's not on the screen. I would say that under the discipline and grievance processes, we make every effort to not go that direction when possible in terms of discipline. And that's why we really try to promote with the department heads identifying issues and problems, doing corrective action planning with both individuals and work groups, and trying to implement whenever possible those steps that avoid disciplinary process. But if that's a necessary step, the grievance and disciplinary process is done by our department and coordinated with the county attorney and the county administrator. In terms of employee benefits, Brooke Jobin is the county's employee benefits manager, and I would say 2010 and into 2011 have been very, very busy years in terms of employee benefits because we've moved into the health insurance consortium in 2010. We changed the health insurance through Blue Cross Blue Shield in October of 2010, and then because of the consortium again in January of 2011. So benefits management has been quite an active role for the department. It includes all the components of various benefits that we administer for county employees. Our health insurance plan also includes TC3 and the library. So Brooke has a fairly broad-reaching impact on both county employees and those other employees of the other entities. She also handles workers' compensation and provides a lot of very valuable experience to the library and TC3 in the area of all benefits. In terms of staff development, we've expanded our employee orientation to include workplace violence prevention, sexual harassment prevention, and valuing diversity. In addition to that, Steve Essis has been pivotal in providing civil service for supervisors training to all of the entities in the county, towns, villages, school district, and BOCES, and that's been very well received. We've also completed two rounds of supervising for success that's included about 50 supervisors and managers in the county. And we work with TCBiz quite frequently on their open enrollment for computer training that can be customized. In terms of workplace diversity, we're taking a very critical look at job descriptions to try to ensure that there are not barriers built into job descriptions in terms of minimum qualifications, to do more community outreach, and also make sure that our exam recruitments are as broad as possible, as well as to ensure that they are as well publicized as possible. Several county employees participated in the last undoing racism training. I believe there were 12 to 15, and the current series also includes about 15 county employees in undoing racism. We participate with the Diversity Consortium, and Steve has maintained the Diversity Consortium's talent bank and distribution list for a number of years. Our goals in the area of a diverse workforce include communication of the county's commitment to diversity and inclusion, again, working closely with WDIC and implementing recommendations from that group as well as others on best practices in this area, targeting our recruitment to augment the broad-based efforts that we need to make, and including cultural competency training for county staff. And we also are trying to do a better job of tracking candidates from the point of application through the exam process, because it can be a long process, and because someone applies for a position, the exam may not come up for 6 or 8 or 10 months, and people very often need to have a job now. So trying to continue to encourage the applicants and to make sure that we stay in communication with them is an important element of that. In addition, in order to maintain a highly skilled and productive workforce, personnel participated and is also helping through Joe's leadership to have other departments participate in what's called smart work training. And that's been very, very helpful to us to evaluate the processes, not the programs that we administer, but how do you do it and how do you do it most effectively. And asking what would always be considered basic questions, but are usually the ones that are overlooked, like, why do we do it this way? And so those trainings have been very helpful to the staff and are really leading to some new initiatives in personnel to streamline our operation. In addition to that, the Workforce Flexibility Project is being chaired by Ed Marks and myself and includes department heads who are looking at the very preliminary stage about all of the flexibilities that are built into our current organization for our workforce, but also what are the new initiatives that we could be exploring besides flexible work schedules or 4-day work weeks telecommuting and things like that. So we're looking at a variety of options in that area, and that will come back to you in the next few months as a report from Joe. One of our goals as part of this organization is to assist all of the departments and the legislature and the county administrator to ensure that Tompkins County can be acknowledged as an employer of choice. Our labor contracts right now are in an expired situation, but that doesn't mean that there aren't other ways that we can let the employees and the people who do the work understand that they are appreciated even in difficult fiscal times. We're looking at other reward and recognition programs, finding more custom ways to mentor employees on career pathways. And when the current climate survey is available in terms of addressing issues and concerns, hopefully we can participate and partner with WDIC in ways to make that those changes that might be helpful. We're also working with several department heads on trainee gateways and opportunities. Some departments have trainee programs now, but in our opinion, not enough. So we need to find more opportunities to create a trainee position in a department that would have lower minimum qualifications but allow more for on-the-job training experience. And I'm going to ask Steve to speak to the issue of technology.
I've got one slide here. As many of you know, we recently rolled out a Facebook page and we've been maintaining that.
I'm sorry.
So we have a new Facebook page, and we've rolled that out, and we've been posting all of our vacancies and exam opportunities to Facebook. And that has been very productive as far as getting the information out to a different group of people that we might not have addressed before. We are in the process of implementing a new human resources and payroll system, which we hope will... It's going to be a cloud-based system. It'll be web-accessible, obviously restricted and locked down. Initially, we hope to achieve some efficiencies just in doing the payroll input, but hopefully at some point in the future, we'll be able to roll out online time card completion. So right now, people submit paper time cards, and those are re-entered in the system that we have. So it's a bit inefficient. We are in the process of, we're contracted with a company to develop an online application system for us, and we hope that that will increase customer service by making it easier for candidates to apply. They'll only have to fill out one online application and then just update that as it needs to be. Ultimately, we will be running our examination program through there. We will be establishing lists. We'll be sending notifications about exams and scores, and hopefully we will be able to certify lists to appointing authorities and make those applications available on a limited basis to those appointing authorities through the web. So right now we spend a lot of time scanning or photocopying paper and sending it around. So it's really part of our green initiative as well. And many of these new electronic initiatives are also parallel with our green focus here. So we want to get away from paper. And one of the last items that we're working on is LaserFiche is software that you use to either scan in or create documents and store them in the LaserFiche program, and it enables you to search on those documents. So hopefully our goal within a year would be to go become a totally paperless office. Right now we're already accepting many more forms and so forth electronically as email attachments, and that has created some efficiencies because you can take them in, save them as a PDF or whatever. But in the future, hopefully people will be able to generate these forms through the website or as email attachments, send them to us. They'll go into the software, and they will get stored. Filing of paper is probably one of our most labor-intensive things that go on in the personnel department. And if we can free up some of that time, we can put that staff to better use in a more productive manner rather than just standing there filing paper. So those are some of the initiatives. Anita mentioned before we're working on the smart work We achieve some of these by working through the Smart Work program, the payroll process, and the online application process. We partnered with different people to sit down and go through that. It really helped us to identify time wasters and to, again, as Anita said, ask, why is it that you do these things? And there were actually a couple of huge labor-intensive processes that we said, well, why do we do it? Once we explored it, we found out we don't have to do it, and so we simply stopped doing it, and it hasn't been detrimental yet. So sometimes it's a good thing to take notice of what you're doing and ask questions why, and hopefully we can move forward.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Anita and Steve. Any questions? Julie.
Anita, back when you were talking about workplace diversity and reaching out to recruit and so forth, I saw the phrase, but you didn't talk about it, one-on-one coaching. And I didn't know whether that meant pre-employment or post-employment.
Well, it can be both, and it's certainly not in every case, but we have been doing some one-on-one coaching with applicants who come to the department and may be applying for more than one position or not know what is available or what they might qualify for, and also referring them to other resources like Workforce One Stop. But in addition to that, within our office, Steve has done a lot of one-on-one with individuals about what career path might be available, what does that process look like, what does the time frame look like, how to follow up, you know, how to develop a resume and follow up, or find the resources to do those kind of things. And also to try to keep the applicants interested, because as I said, in such a long process before there's a job at the end sometimes, people think that, well, I applied last month and I didn't hear anything, so nothing's going to happen. So the staff does work one-on-one with people to try and make sure they understand every step of the process and also what other opportunities that could lead to. We do have some positions in the county, well, we have many positions in the county, where if you come in at an entry-level position, there is a logical promotional field, and people don't necessarily know that. So we've been trying to impart more of that information.
Thanks. Anyone else? Carol?
Yeah, thanks for this presentation. It's helpful to have the overview. One of the things that I think would be helpful at some point to hear more about, so that we're not only discussing it when particular resolutions come up, is just more background on how does the county set various policy related to personnel? How do we set salaries? What's our policy about raises? How does that work with longevity and cost of living, if or not, and benefits, sick leave, our sick leave policy? So things like that. It would be helpful to have a presentation about either here or in the committee, but advertised to all.
Okay. Thank you.
Frank?
Thanks, Martha. Anita, there were a couple of references to working with other municipalities, interceding with the school district, and on and on and on. Does your department get reimbursed anything for those items? Is that an income source for your department?
No. We administer. For example, the county's health insurance includes about 2,600 people, maybe 1,200 subscribers, and included in that plan is the library, TC3, and the retirees of the library, TC3, and even a few of the old hospital are on our health insurance plan. And there's no reimbursement except the hospital may reimburse for actual premium on their retirees. There's premium reimbursement, but not administrative reimbursement for that. We also administer the civil service exam process for all of the entities that were listed, and each exam has a cost. This county made a policy decision many years ago not to charge applicants. We did it for a period of time, and then we stopped charging for exams. But the county pays the state civil service for the exams that are administered, and we don't bill TC3 or the library or the school districts back for that service.
Actually, by law, we can't bill them that. It's written in the civil service law that that's a service that we provide. Towns, or I'm sorry, cities can bill their schools.
You need to use the microphone.
Sorry. So cities can bill their school districts for costs that are incurred, but counties cannot bill the towns, villages, or special districts.
Is this another unfunded mandate?
Has been for years.
Pat, are we required to be organized the way we are for civil service administration? I thought in some counties they do it differently. It's not always centralized with a county, is it, or am I mistaken?
There, you can You can administer civil service in a number of different ways. Many agencies in New York State are through a commission type of operation. The city of Ithaca has a civil service commission. Personally, I believe that that's a much less efficient method, if you can call civil service efficient, in the fact that most commissions only meet once per month. So basically, depending on the timing of an action, you could add as much as a month to the actual action, you know, like appointing candidates for employment. We work under a personnel officer. I actually did a review of that, and I probably still have the documentation. I did it a few years ago because somebody asked for it. So if you'd like, I can provide that.
Anyone else? I have a question about support for department heads in recruiting, or anybody who's in any supervisor who's recruiting or advertising for a position. Recently, I was just poking around on Facebook and found the Society for Black Engineers, two different websites for Cornell alumni groups. I forwarded that to Anita, and then she gladly forwarded that on to Bill Sesney for the position that he's looking for. So I'm interested in sort of using technology that way, not just kind of having it on our site waiting for people to find it, but kind of going out and looking for groups like that. I was surprised to find that.
Martha, I do targeted recruitments, and those are some of the tools I use. There are a number of alumni listservs or websites that exist for the colleges. And so what I'll do is I'll find a college or a list of colleges, in this case for New York State, that deal with engineering, and I will post that opportunity on their pages. Many of the Facebook pages, though, that you're talking about are kind of locked. It's informational. The information goes one way, kind of like the personnel page. It goes one way. So I can't necessarily post on there unless I get through to somebody on the other end.
Okay. Yeah. And then, in general, the idea of the kind of support for department heads who are hiring in general. If somebody's not sure how to go about or what the process might be, if you can just describe what...
Steve and I and the rest of the staff, we all work very closely with all the department heads, all of their personnel liaisons in the larger departments. In fact, recently with the health insurance incentive for the retirees that was approved by the legislature for those who retired during a period of time, aside from being outside of the budget cycle, which does happen for a period of time every year, the department still had an opportunity for some turnover because of employees who took the health insurance incentive. And we have worked in customizing and helping them tailor positions to what they believe are the current and perhaps the strategic planning for the next 5 years for their department. In some cases, it's been an opportunity for them to reorganize, either reduce staff or evaluate their programs in such a way that it allows them to hire staff at a different level or a different position than the one that they're replacing. So not every replacement has been an automatic senior caseworker left and a senior caseworker was hired. It's been an opportunity for a little bit more, at least evaluation, if not creative thinking, around how do we sustain the programs in the kind of environment where the organization may not be able to sustain the entire workforce that we had to do it before. So we are doing that one-on-one with departments.
Great. Great. Thank you very much. Nathan, I see your hand.
Oh, just responding on Facebook. So I think it's great that you have a Facebook presence. But one of the things that you can do is you can use ads on Facebook. And with $2 a day, you can run 10,000, it can run on 10,000 pages of different people. And you can actually target that ad to, say if I wanted everybody who worked at Cornell University between the ages of 18 and 65, I could actually target an ad specifically to that group of people. Or anybody that's a member of these, not all organizations, but if they have over 1,000 members, you can actually target an ad just for the membership of that particular society, organization, whatever. And so it's really a cheap, cost-effective way to get things out there.
Thank you. So our tech consultant will talk to you later about how to do that. Thank you, Nathan. Jim.
Thank you, Anita. Thank you, Steve, for coming over here. We had promised a 10-minute presentation, and I believe your part of it was 10 minutes.
Thank you.
Actually, it says 5 on the agenda.
Yeah, okay. Anyone else? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate your time. For my report, if I could just take a second and piggyback on a couple of things that were said during legislative privilege. I couldn't agree with you more about the attacks on educators. I was fortunate to see my brother over this weekend. He's a teacher in Seattle. And pretty much the first half hour of our conversation, after having seen him for 3 years, was about how appalled he felt, how insulted he was feeling and attacked by the climate in Wisconsin and other states. And then I got a piece in the mail from the Committee to Save New York. Now, that was really faintly written, Committee to Save New York, on the back. And the front was about, did you know how, that while our school kids are struggling, et cetera, there are people taking, literally putting money in their pockets, and it was about these wealthy and overpaid administrators, superintendents. And, it's really an attack on all public servants, and I think we need to call them out for that kind of thing, and I don't appreciate it. I don't think our children deserve it. I don't think our teachers and administrators deserve it. Another point about what happened in Japan, the role of regulation. Those buildings didn't fall down by the earthquake. Very few buildings were knocked down by the 8.9
9.0.
I guess I missed
that's
it.
That's a logarithmic scale, so that's right. Actually a huge
increase. Difference.
Yeah, it's manyfold.
Very few buildings fell down, and that's because regulation, government and regulation and enforcement worked. And speaking of public servants, I also want to thank our emergency responders during the snowstorm a week ago, 20 some inches. Dumped on us in less than 24 hours, and it seemed the sheriff's office and Department of Emergency Response worked well together and pretty much told Joe what they needed to do, and nobody woke me up, and that was fine. So, the snow plows were out there, and it was really, the whole team really working very efficiently and well to keep our community safe, and I appreciate their work. And I will wrap up one other thing about energy policy with the issue of infill housing. I took the opportunity the last week or so to weigh in on two housing projects. One is the Lansing Reserve project being proposed by Better Housing just off of Dart Drive in the village of Lansing, and the Seneca Way apartment building that would replace the Challenge Industries building. In Lansing, I went and spoke in favor of that project, and I wrote a letter in favor of Seneca Way. We need to really do things differently. If we're going to avoid nuclear power, if we're going to avoid natural gas, fracking. There are downsides to everything except conservation. There are downsides to everything except bringing people to where they can use transit or where they can walk to work. And so I think all of us have to recognize that housing projects located in those areas, affordable, included, especially when they include affordable units, are really what we need to do. And just finally, so those are my soapbox pieces for the day. I'll save the rest of it for Albany tomorrow when Will and Joe and I are packing off once again to go shake our fists at the powers that be. NYSAC is called a lobby day for tomorrow. They have, I believe, a number of meetings set up for us that where we'll be part of a larger delegation. And we have meetings set up with Senator Nozzolio, thanks to Pat Pryor's making a phone call, Jim Seward, and Tom O'Mara as well. And Barbara Lifton, our assemblywoman, has told us we don't need to talk to her. She's completely on our side. So that's great. That's my report. Any questions? All right. Thank you. County Administrator's report. Joe Marianne.
Thanks, Martha. I have a couple items tonight. My final item will be a recommendation for an appointment of public health director. I will seek your confirmation, but I'll hold that. I'll hold the good news until the end of this report. State budget's still very much in the news, and it's very much on our minds. A lot of things happening right now in real time. You may remember that as a part of Frank's committee review last week or the week before, we had quantified the impact of the state budget on us at $1.3 million. That's somewhat of an underestimation because it doesn't take into account the effect on TC3, the library, and a number of agencies that do work in partnership with us, but it was $1.3 million. Within the last day or two, both houses of the state legislature have submitted their own budgets. That's really the kickoff for negotiations between the governor and the two houses on a final budget. The reports that I've read suggest that they're about $1 billion apart in a $10 billion gap, so they're within pretty close distance in terms of their respective positions. Prevailing belief is that there will be a budget done on or about April 1st, so they are committing themselves to trying to get it done by April 1st. I'm not sure if that's good or bad, but it seems to be a deadline that they're trying to adhere to. In terms of what we're beginning to see out of these budgets coming out of the individual houses, maybe the most important development is that you recall that several of our programs, COPS, which, as we all have to remember, isn't uniformed police officers, it's community optional preventive services and DSS, that COPS was going to be affected, as were several of our youth programs, by the consolidation of a number of individual programs into, call it, a block grant. In that transition, a lot of money was going to be cut from those programs. The threat of elimination existed for several. It looks as if, in the legislative bills, the programs themselves have been retained. You'll see those programs, I think the program names in the budget. The funding has been cut for each of those. And we're trying to get our arms around how much that funding cut may mean. So, to some extent, the notion of eliminating whole programs may have been diminished. At the same time, there's still a very real threat of significant reductions in funding for those programs that are very important to us and what we do. There's also a development on the Senate side of the budget, and I think this is one we need to keep closely in our sights. You recall that there were some very profound changes in the way the state was going to pay for public assistance programs. If you remember, the state was going to have the federal government pay the full cost of one of the two welfare programs. So we would not be a 25% participant in family assistance, nor would the state. But then the second welfare program, that's called Safety Net, would go from a 50-50 plan, state and county, to a 30% state, 70% county arrangement. Profound change in structure of the way welfare is financed in the state. And it didn't work to our advantage. There was something of a loss of funding that went along with that transition for the counties. In the Senate bill, it gets even worse. It goes from a 30-70 split to a 26-74 split. And in that small change in formula, we suffer another $128,000 loss if that happens. So we're looking at that one very closely, and in terms of things that we'll bring to the table tomorrow in Albany, that's certainly one of them. The cap I haven't found much in the way of conversation on the cap right now. I think both houses are concentrating more on the budget itself as opposed to the cap, so we're not any farther along in our understanding of when and what today than we were a week ago. So in terms of the state budget, a lot of things happening very quickly. We'll keep our eye on what's going on. We'll bring it to your attention. I think it was Will that suggested we push back hard on these issues, and we are indeed doing that, and we will be there in person tomorrow. With respect to the federal budget, just one item I'd like to bring to your attention there. Julia Maddock has explained to me, and I think to many of you, that under the House of Representatives budget extender, funding would be eliminated for workforce investment, workforce development. So our WIB, our Workforce Investment Board, and our One-Stop Employment Center would be unfunded in terms of federal support at a time when I think everybody would agree that's one of the worst things imaginable to do. And I think we need to step up. And in terms of pushback, that's another area that we need to push back on and let people know the folly of that decision. So with respect to budgets, that's my report. There is more going on than budgets, though. The corporate compliance effort that you know is underway.
Joe, one second. If we can take, are there any questions about the budget? Frank?
Joe, is it the status of the Senate, the state, the Senate and the Assembly's budget proposals? I would just, in coming from a TCAT budget committee meeting earlier today, we were told that both of them have now submitted.
Yes.
Have you had a chance to see those at all?
I brought the Assembly packet with me so I could skim it tonight. I haven't seen the full Senate packet, so we're getting odds and ends coming out of NYSAC and the listservs that we all belong to. There's a fair amount of agreement, at least between the Assembly and the governor, in terms of cuts that the governor's proposed. I suspect there are as well with the Senate. I think the differences are probably smaller than I've seen in my years, and I do think that they will negotiate a budget by April 1st. And if there are items, for example, if TCAT has specific items of concern, I think we all need to know about those so we can include those on the list of things that we talk about when we talk to Albany.
Well, TCAT, in the governor's proposal, believe it or not, the STOA reimbursement is whole. If it passes the way he's proposed it, in our forecast for this year, knock on wood, so far so good.
That's
so, but in order to buy that proposal, in order to go along with that, you have to buy the rest of the, you know, you got to buy the rest of the cow, you know.
Right.
Julie?
Yes, you said that there hasn't been much about the cap. I hope, however, you will take the opportunity when you meet with the folks you're going to meet with to, again, point out that the cap has nothing to do with the state budget, and it could very well be better to not act on that this year and wait until the redesign team's work is complete.
I would actually, you're right, Julie, and I've stressed that with some of the conversations I've had with people in Albany already, but it's actually a terrible shame that it has nothing to do with the budget, because that means that the state isn't picking up any county mandates.
I know.
Because that would show up in their budget.
Yes.
But clearly, there's no mandate relief in their budget. Mm-hmm. And that's everything they said about a property tax cap. Oh, we'd never do it without mandate relief.
Well, that's the message.
There's a good, in your NYSAC counties in the news, there was a good a link to a New York Times editorial the last day or two. It was very good. I urge that you take a look at that. Pam, did I see your hand up too? Okay. Thank you, Joe. Sorry for the interruption.
Okay. Quick update on corporate compliance. I know it sounds like the most dull topic imaginable. It is, in a way. It's a very process-oriented thing, but it's a very crucial thing in light of attention on governance generally and particularly the Medicaid program. Paula Younger is here. She is chairing that effort. The committee, the compliance committee, has gotten together. They had their initial meeting last week. They're meeting once a month, every third Monday, until the project is done, which is about 6 months from now. They are taking substantive steps forward in developing and then implementing a corporate compliance plan, which, again, in terms of audits, Medicaid audits from the state, it is very important that we have a plan in place and that we practice the tenets of that plan. So Paula and her group are working diligently on that. The last item I have in my report, I always yearn for good news, and I bring you good news tonight. It relates to the proposed appointment of a public health director. And I would like to present that to you tonight. I will, at the end of my remarks, ask you whether there's a need to go to an executive session, if there's anything you would like to talk about. If not, I will ask you for a motion of confirmation to confirm an appointment, and I would hope that we could bring this to closure tonight. Let me though say in open session that we have, I believe, an excellent candidate for this position. His name is Frank Krupa, K-R-U-P-P-A. Frank is a native of the Southern Tier. He went to high school in Windsor High School. He graduated with a degree in environmental studies from SUNY Binghamton. He has a master's in public administration from Central Florida. He began his career in environmental health in the state of Florida by issuing sewer permits. We started at the very low rung of the career ladder, but then moved up into positions of increasing responsibility very rapidly over the course of the last several years. He's currently serving as the public health director of Okeechobee County, Florida, which is a county of about 40,000 people in Central Florida. I will tell you that Frank began to pull away from the pack, beginning with his writing samples that were insightful, readable, organized, and to the point. He participated in two interviews, one of which included a presentation, and just trying to characterize his interviews. I'm going to use a word that has become cliche, but it shouldn't be. He exhibited a true passion for the mission of public health. He's shown that he has an ability not only to exist but to move a very complex bureaucracy. He has a combination, I believe, of intelligence and confidence that allows him to interact comfortably with citizens, with staff, with stakeholders, and he has an understanding of community. I will tell you that he's a candidate who wasn't out job shopping. In terms of recruitment, Anita talked about how we broadly recruit for positions. He happened to see it on a trade association webpage. He and his family are considering starting a family and wanted to be around family, and was drawn back to his roots in this area. He and the other finalists did interact with the health department staff. We can call it a meet and greet, but it was actually an opportunity for staff to get to know the candidate, to hear his views on things, to ask him questions. And I will tell you that interaction elicited, I think, the strongest positive responses that we've seen. There was real enthusiasm from staff, and I swear to you, this is not a stacked sample. I'm going to read a couple of the employee responses to that interaction. It's an excellent candidate. This is your guy. We need this guy. He's awesome. Hire him, one says. He'd be a good advocate for the health department, exemplary communicator, and so forth. So in terms of staff interaction, very positive at every level of the staff there, including management. The recommendation tonight is the product of a very long search process conducted on a national basis by a search committee that included two legislators, two members of the Board of Health, Cuba Medical Center's medical director, Brenda, the interim manager of the health department, a representative of the Finger Lakes Independence Center, the head of the Health Planning Council, and me. This group, over the last year, has interviewed a lot of people, looked at a lot of resumes, and gave this candidate their unanimous recommendation, and I would call it an enthusiastic recommendation. In terms of commitments, the candidate has he will accept the position. I know that's always a question. The Board of Health recommended his appointment last week. It was presented to the Board of Health, and their recommendation is a central part of this process. So I bring this recommendation to you with enthusiasm, without reservation at all. I think we should feel good about the results of this process. I also have to acknowledge the work that Brenda Crosby has done over the past year, along with her division managers and their staff. This is a tough time for the health department, and without stable, strong, smart management, things could have gotten very bad, and I'm very pleased with the way the health department has been maintained during this long period of transition. So, again, I would offer, if you'd like to discuss anything in executive session, we certainly can, but if not, I'm asking for a motion of confirmation to confirm Frank Krueger.
Thank you, Joe, and I want to thank you for your hours and hours of work on this, as well as the personnel staff. Frank and Leslin, who were on the search committee as well, a big commitment of time. And I want to echo your sentiments about Brenda and the whole health department staff. So thank you, Frank.
Joe, not to be super redundant, but I think everybody deserves to thank you. And in particular, Steve Estes. Yes. Steve, for a year and a half, has kept us, he was like a taskmaster. Even I learned how to respond to his emails and fill in the blanks. So it was really quite an effort, and thank you. So on behalf of, I guess, the legislature, I think we would like to, I'd like to offer a motion or resolution, which will be recorded, Kathy. A resolution or a motion?
Motion.
A motion to endorse your selection of Frank Krueger as the new public health director to begin in April.
Thank you, Frank. Leslin's a second.
That's a second that I also want to add to Joe's list of people around the table that it's important to mention at CSEA representation.
I'm sorry.
CSEA representation is there as well. And yes, I do second that.
Thank you very much, Leslin.
Thanks, Leslin.
Any questions or comments or need to go into executive session?
I just need a clarification. So this would preempt an executive session for discussion. We would just vote on it out on the floor right now.
I think Joe wanted to offer the opportunity to go into executive session if anyone felt they needed to discuss or ask any questions that felt sensitive. It's a personnel issue. It's appropriate for executive session. So we could do that if anybody has any wish to do so.
I just wanted to be clear.
Is that a request to go into executive session?
No.
Okay. All right. Joe?
I need to make one other note. This is a term appointment. There are few positions in county governments that are, by charter or state law, a term appointment, and this is one of, I think, three in our government that is subject to that. This is a six-year term by charter.
Okay. Anyone else? Will?
Relevant to that, Joe, is there a probationary period built into that, and what would that be?
It's typically a nine-month probation period.
Anyone else? Are we ready to vote on the motion? All in favor of approving the recommendation to hire Frank Krueger for the public health director, please raise your hand. Any opposed? Anita, please call Mr. Krueger and tell him it was a unanimous vote, and we look forward to seeing him here. Thank you so much. Thank you, Joe.
Thanks. Joe, you better call Brenda.
Flowers to Brenda.
Yeah, a big bouquet. Very good, Martha.
All right. Thanks very much, Joe. County Attorney Jonathan Wood.
Thanks, Martha. I had promised a few meetings ago to give a brief report on the county attorney's family court practice, which I hoped to get in your folders before this meeting, but because I just got here about a minute before the meeting, I passed it out a couple minutes ago. I hope people got it. Just to, you know, please review it and call me if you have any questions, but just to point out a few, I'm not sure if you call them highlights, but important points. In 2010, we had a rather dramatic increase in juvenile delinquency petitions. Now, as some of you may know, crime, juvenile delinquency is like all crime, tend to go up and down and up and down. But last year was a year where we had quite a lot of petitions, and including violations petitions, we had 133 juvenile delinquency petitions filed. That's a lot. Also, they tended to be of a more serious nature than in past years, I mean more involving crimes of violence. Interestingly, PINS petitions, which tend to be less serious, are somewhat down last year. That's because probation is handling that more, trying to do more at probation and less with the courts. So those have been going down somewhat over the years. But I guess the long and short of it is that we have a very busy practice in juvenile crime and PINS, and we're getting, at least recently, more serious and more juvenile delinquencies. And we had a total of juvenile delinquency and PINS petitions of 195 last year, including violations. And when you consider what's involved in preparing the petitions, appearing in court, proving the matters, then sentencing, which they usually call disposition in family court, and often follow-up, it's quite a lot of work. Mostly handled by Steve Flash and Susie Cook, but the rest of the people in the office also do some as well. And that's my report. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Jonathan. Any questions? Will?
On your chart, what is MH?
MH is mental health.
Okay.
In other words, those cases involve mental health issues.
I see.
I note by a statement here, by mid-August 2010, we had filed as many JD petitions as all of 2009.
That's true.
Pretty striking. Any other questions, Dooley?
Yep. In by year, you have rows that have percent signs in, for example, the cases you now prosecute. What are those percentages of? They don't. It doesn't add up to 100%. It's more than. I'm confused.
No, those are percentages of the cases. For example, if you see, like in 2010, 60% involved violence. They could also involve more than one thing, so it shouldn't add up to 100%. Something could involve both violence and weapons. They could involve violence, weapons, and drugs. So that's the percentage of cases that involve those particular things, but it could certainly add up to more than 100%.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Jonathan. Finance Director David Squires.
Briefly, I want to report that the February, second month in a row, sales tax was up over last year. It was up by 1.9%. Secondly, this time of year, we're really immersed in closing out last year's finances. And so the county audit will begin at the last week in April. I'm feeling optimistic that we will evidence 2010 is relatively stable across the board in all of our funds. And finally, I wanted to bring to your attention that we will be coming forth with two bond resolutions in the next couple of months. One dealing with solid waste, reconfiguring the facility for the new contract to process the. There's going to be about a $3 million investment going forward there. And the second, retrofitting the property we recently acquired on State Street. When we get an estimate on that, we'll be moving forward with the bond resolution. So that's my report.
Thank you, David. Any questions? All right, thank you very much. Consent agenda, resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda. Pam.
I would like to withdraw Resolution N.
All right. Thank you. And the consent agenda, resolutions and appointments to be voted on if they're not controversial. Frank.
Madam Chair, I just want to, as you begin the consent agenda, just to I don't know how you want to handle this. There's a couple of revised resolutions in the packet. One is resolution.
I will state
will
the,
you state that
yeah,
one?
Yeah, I've got them here. Okay. Yeah. Okay, so if there's anything to anyone wants to pull off, just call out, let me know. Resolution A, budget adjustments, various departments. Resolution B, authorize. B is off. Resolution C.
Off.
Resolution D.
Off.
Resolution E, authorization to accept funds and budget adjustment, mental health. Resolution F, and that's the revised, and I should say Resolution C was revised as well. Resolution F, revised, creation of project assistant position in the Tompkins County Office of the Aging. Resolution G, award of bid exterior landscaping at the Tompkins Regional Airport. Resolution H, revised, award of bid operation of household waste management facility, solid waste management. Resolution I, acceptance of snowmobile trail grant. Resolution J, 2011 tourism capital grant awards. Resolution K, authorizing 2011 Federal Transit Administration Section 5307 grant application for regional transportation study. Resolution L, approval of contract for arts and cultural organization development community arts partnership. I have a motion on the consent agenda. Frank moves, Nathan seconds. All in, and I have appointments, I'm sorry. Substance Abuse Subcommittee, Nancy Rosen. Mental Health Subcommittee, Patricia Zalewski. Air Services Board, Michael Stamm and Alan Peterson. Tompkins County Youth Services Board, Marnie Kirchgessner. Hillview Road Landfill Citizens Advisory Committee, Dooley Kiefer. So moved and seconded.
Yep.
All in favor of the consent agenda, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous. So let me look at the order of things. I know we have people in the audience. They've left. Okay. Amy is here. Let me see if we have HHS. All right, Frank, why don't you start with yours, and then we'll go through the order of reports.
But would you like me to do the Health Committee report at the same time or just do the resolution?
Sure, go ahead with the report and then do the resolutions.
Okay. The Health Committee had two meetings in March. One was the 8th and one was the 9th. Some of you were able to attend the meeting on the 8th. That was the special meeting with regard to the impact of the Medicaid and the governor's budget. Joe Mariana distributed his assessment, if you will, at that meeting that showed that if the governor's budget passed without appropriate mandate relief, the county departments would take a hit that we'd probably have to absorb by July 1st of about $1.3 million. That affected youth, probation, mental health, health, DSS, COFA, a myriad, principally the departments that come through the health committee, but there was some carryover because of some of the joint items that go on between DSS and some of the other committees. In addition to that, there was one item that the state never fails to come up with a new way to hit us. We may be hit with a retroactive reimbursement that we have to make to them back to October, if memory serves me right. At that meeting, I also had invited representatives from Family and Children's, the United Way Challenge, the Racker Centers, TCA, and the purpose of that was to see what the impact of Medicaid was on their various operations. Just as one example, Roger Sibley from Racker indicated that the hit would represent about a $15 million shot to his agency. The ripple effect, as you can imagine, is pretty severe. Joe went away with a lot more information than he wanted to. James Brown from the United Way indicated that there is absolutely no way that the United Way would be able to step up to the plate and plug this hole at all. But in addition to the direct hits to the departments, the economic impact of that size of a loss would be absolutely devastating to the community because of the loss of jobs. The very people that we're trying to put to work, the very people that we have working now might have to take advantage of some of the very programs that are impacted here. It was an informative meeting. Not all the news was good, unfortunately, but I think it provided some ammunition. This is what Chairperson Robertson had asked we put together so that when they go to, I assume tomorrow, when you're in Albany, you'll have some ammunition to show what the impact is on our county beyond just our own departments. Thank you. The regular meeting took place the next day, and I'll just highlight a couple of items from that meeting. We had a report from Social Services with regard to the, do you remember that grant that we received, the $2.4 million grant, the rapid rehousing grant money? Well-spent money. They received a real pat on the back. It covered, that was the housing first item. They served 512 households, I'm reading this from the report, a total of 1,253 persons, both adults and children, and 93% of the persons that were discharged were only had a one-time need. It was so well received that we're in line for another grant, according to what we were told by Dina Bodner. So it was a very worthwhile exercise. The second item, and I'm glad Amy's here, we got into the recreation partnership agreement. You'll be dealing with this probably at some point, certainly during the budget season. But again, we wanted to give the committee a heads up because the towns and the partners have to be approached prior to this contract expiring. And surprisingly, there were not very many questions raised at the committee. I think everybody had an opportunity to review it. Nobody wants to see a lot of this go away, but the concern is the funding, of course. The resolutions and most of the other items are reflected on the agenda tonight, so I won't go through every single one of these. The next formal committee meeting is the 13th of April. And I will end there. And if there aren't any questions, I'll go right into the resolutions, Martha.
Pat, I have a question, Frank, about that. The first meeting that you were talking about where you talked about the cuts that the agencies would face. If they lose that much money, do we have any sense of what that would do to money that gets leveraged by the money that would be lost?
What I remember, Joe, you help me out with this. What I remember is it would be substantial because of the nobody, because it's all speculative now based on the governor's proposed budget. I don't think there was a formal impact number that was given. The one that I was using, the Roger Sibley number from Racker Center, a lot of that is leveraged money, a lot of it. Joe, you want to add anything to that?
No, I think, Frank, you've characterized it well. I don't think there are any dollar signs put in the leveraging effect of the cuts.
Challenge Industries, Patrick McGee gave us a somewhat of a sad tale that two of the programs that go through Challenge will not exist anymore, and they're two of the workshop programs where they actually put the people into jobs. So here we are trying to create new employment,
right,
and we're kicking everybody in the shins by drying up the funding source.
Thank you, Frank. Resolution B, then.
Which one?
Well, you'll start with B.
B?
You have a couple that came off the consent.
Authorizing, resolution B is authorizing reimbursement of moving expenses for the new public health director, and I so move.
Is there a second? Will second that. Julie, you took it off? Okay.
I asked for it to come off because although I think we have a great county administrator, he doesn't need to be mentioned twice, and I wanted to give him a chance to fix that whereas to be correct.
If you look at line 14 of the resolution, and I typed this, so it's my fault. Actually, it should end at line 13 after administrator. The words that say the Board of Health and the county administrator should be deleted. So you can end that at the end of line 13 by putting a semicolon and an and then it will read cogently.
I assume that's a friendly amendment?
Yes.
And Will? Well,
sure.
Okay. Anything else? Ready to vote. All in favor of Resolution B with that revision? Please raise your hand. Nathan?
No, I'm sorry.
Oh, any opposed? That's unanimous.
Okay, Resolution C was pulled, I believe.
Yes, and there's a revised version.
Requesting New York State to maintain funding streams for Youth Bureau and further urging elimination of competitive bid funding. And I so move.
Is there a second? Jim seconds that.
The revision is on the very first page, way down at the bottom, the one-line resolve. We thought it might be better to say urge instead of directed. So.
Okay. And who took this off? Kathy?
Thank you. I support this resolution wholeheartedly. I appreciate the clear description of the committee meetings. I was unable to attend. I just wanted to make sure that the public is aware of the impact that this would have, the loss of local planning and control, the way that this particular proposal of the primary prevention incentive program eliminates fundings to many rural counties. It has a particularly insidious impact on rural counties and the importance of these funding streams to our community.
Excuse me.
Anyone else? Julie.
As long as it got pulled off, I would like to call your attention to the third whereas from the bottom. There are no line numbers on the revised resolution. It reads, whereas if adopted, this portion of the executive budget would result in the minimal loss of over $200,000 of youth services dollars for Tompkins County. I think what is meant is it would result at a minimum in the loss of over $200,000.
I think you're right.
I don't think $200,000 is a minimal thing.
I think you're right. Thanks, Stu.
Yep.
That's friendly.
So would result at a minimum?
Yes, in the loss of.
In the loss. Friendly to Jim? You second that? Okay. Carol?
No, I had another comment. Is that one?
We're done with that? Yeah.
Okay. No, I just wanted, I support this, and I thank Kathy and the committee for bringing it to us. I just want to, since it was pulled off, I just want to say that there are an awful lot of our agencies are slated for cuts in the county budget, and I'm glad that these particular items are coming to us, but my support of them in no way indicates lack of support for the others that don't have resolutions in front of us tonight. These are timely in particular.
Thank you, Carol. Frank?
Yeah, thank you. The I'm glad you brought that up, Carol. The this was a question that some of us raised about the timing, and because of several of our representatives, Martha, Joe, and Will, going to Albany tomorrow, we wanted to get what we could done. And this one and the one from TCA will hopefully accomplish that, because we didn't have an opportunity because of our last committee meeting to get these done. And you're absolutely right. There are a lot of other organizations and agencies that are affected.
I'd like to make a general comment here that anybody can comment on a consent agenda resolution during that committee's report without pulling it off the consent agenda, so that in the future we, you know, things can still go through and the committee chair can report on it in specific and we can comment or ask questions. So that's just one thought in terms of our process. Anything else? Ready to vote on revised resolution C? All in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? Opposed or in favor?
I'm second slow. if you attended our budget meeting, you know that.
You did raise your hand after I said opposed. I think that's unanimous, right?
At our budget meeting, we decided that if you didn't raise your hand, you were basically raising your hand. So.
Okay, well, that was then, and this is now. All right. Thank you very much. Resolution E. Frank.
No,
or D? C. I'm sorry, C.
D.
D. I see I wrote on top of that. Okay.
Nathan, were you social networking?
No, actually, I wasn't. I was doing
my resolution D, supportive community action programs, and I so move.
Is there a second? Kathy seconds. Questions? Kathy.
I pulled this off, and I think it is important at times to have a discussion at the time that the resolution is considered. I serve on the Community Action Board, and some have characterized the current budget as a war on poor people, and I think that the concerns about community services, Black Grant, and the possibility of pulling support to them are well-founded. One of the whereases points out that 17,000 Tompkins County adults and children live on incomes at or below the federal poverty guidelines. This is something that I think shouldn't be an asterisk or an afterthought or mentioned in passing. I think that this goes to the heart of why we need to stop and examine every one of these things. Tompkins Community Action has a 45-year history of successfully partnering with low and limited income individuals and families to promote self-sufficiency. I mention this because, in particular, there's a jobs component to this that, in these disastrous economic times, would be very debilitating to the very people that we most need to help. And I wanted to highlight, not to show preference to one community agency over another, but to point out time and again, in this case, repetition is a good thing because there really is a war on the people that can least afford it, women and children. And we need every time to point it out because in the aggregate, we sometimes lose sight. And when we pass things without really explaining it, sometimes the public doesn't understand the enormity of the task that's before us. So I will reserve the right to pull resolutions off the consent agenda when I think that there's an opportunity for us to educate one another and the public about the particular impact.
Thank you, Kathy. Anyone else? Ready to vote. All in favor of resolution D, please raise your hand. Any opposed? Thank you.
I think that's it, Martha.
Okay. No, you have F. What? I'm sorry. That's
no,
right.
F passed.
Yeah, that's right. Frank, I will.
Just one, to add one thing to Frank's report, which is he mentioned the Recreation Partnership. You all should have gotten in your mailbox this invitation to a annual meeting of the partnership that's happening on the 31st of this month. And I would encourage everybody to go. It's they're going to be explaining to what the partnership does and give a context for a decision we will have to be making, which is whether we want to continue the contract, which is up for renewal. And they're giving us dinner or later, so please do come.
Well, thank you. I forgot.
If you didn't get it, I'd be happy to make copies and get it out to you.
All right. Thank you very much, Frank. Public Safety Committee, Peter Stein, Chair.
Yeah. Let's see, we had our meeting yesterday. The chief business of the meeting was a report from the sheriff about what he's planning in the future. We heard of a particular change he made in integrating the administrative parts of the road patrol and the corrections unit so that he could provide the same, or the department could provide the same amount of oversight with less expenditure of time. We talked at the meeting about the two hires that have been made recently, one in the corrections division and the other for a road patrol, and learned what processes they're using now for making hires. The hires are, of course, done by the sheriff, but he has a search committee now, or an evaluation committee, or an interview committee, I'm not sure what the right adjective is, where they ask a formal list of questions to each of the candidates and then grade the answers. And in this objective way, that's how the hire was. The idea is to be able to hire with an objective set of criteria. As chairman of the Public Safety Commission, I've been spending some time trying to understand the operations that come under it. I think I reported once before about the 8-hour trip I took during a snowstorm with the road patrol, which I found extremely worth doing, and learned a great deal about what they do. And yesterday I spent not quite so much time, but about an hour with the Alternatives for Incarceration group as they went through their semi-weekly evaluation of clients and trying to figure out what they were going to do. And I found this, both of these experiences very enlightening. You know, one has stereotypes about people. Stereotypes about cops are that they're rough, rugged guys that don't have a lot of heart and feeling. And the stereotype for alternatives to incarceration among a lot of people are soft-hearted liberals that don't understand reality when they face it. And what was interesting to me is that neither of these two trips, the stereotypes did not describe what I saw at all. With the road patrol, I found deputies who acted more like social workers than ones than the stereotype of the rugged cop who goes and pushes people around. Very sensitive to people's, to individuals' feelings, to the difficulties that they're in certain situations. I was deeply impressed by that. And with regard to the alternatives for incarceration, I found people who had worked with parolees, had worked with cases that had been failures and cases that had been successes, and were not at all averse to sending someone to jail if they felt that the alternatives of our incarceration did not look like they would be successful. With regard to the probation, I think we face a really serious problem, which I think I've said before here, but I'm so impressed every time I go and talk to those people, I think I'll repeat it again. The support from the state for probation goes down every year. And so our choice is either to increase ours or to cut down the operation, to reduce the operation. And of course, when you reduce an operation, you save money. But in the end, it's not clear you save money, because what the probation department is, that's really what alternatives to incarceration are. Namely, what you do with probation is you keep people out of jail. And you may feel better putting them in jail, but I'm telling you, you pay more for putting them in jail than you pay for probation officers to keep them out of jail. So that's a conundrum that we're going to face. And I honestly have not in my own mind figured out what the right way to deal with that problem is. End of report.
Thank you very much, Peter. Any questions? Appreciate that report and the time that you're spending with the staff. That's great. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, last one being Claiborne Chair.
No report. WDIC will meet next Wednesday.
Thank you, Leslie. You want to mention a luncheon that's coming up?
Oh, sure. the county is involved as a planning member of the annual Women's History Month Sister Friends Luncheon, which is a large celebration of 350 women gathering in the campus of Ithaca College to celebrate being woman and celebrate the histories that we all bring. It's intergenerational, so everyone from probably 4 years old to who knows what age will be there. And we're not saying that men are, every year we say that men are not invited, but just know that you'll be in the company of 350 women. It is your comfort. So that is occurring. Martha, thank you, because it occurred to me that I needed to make also a public service announcement. Before I do that, let me say this one thing. Today was the funeral of another matriarch in our African-American community, Dorothy Rollins, who passed this past Sunday. Today was her funeral. It's just a reminder that it's another piece of her history in this community. This is a woman who served and served the community well, was a true public servant, always had a smile. As they eulogized her, they talked a lot about always smiling, but had so much history to talk about. Some of that history is captured in some work I did several years ago with the Cornell Ithaca Partnership in a it's a manuscript sitting on my shelf that is yet to be published. But just talking about some of the history of the railroad and the building of the railroad and the people who came here and some of the things they faced, the tragedies, I would say, they faced as African-Americans in this community. We have been losing the women in our community who have that history. A lot of African-American history is not written. It is just passed on verbally from generation to generation, and so we've been trying to capture much of it from their memory. So the community does mourn the passing of Mrs. Rollins today, and that part of the legacy of our community, and we appreciate her family for having shared her with us. So I wanted to share that. My public service announcement is airport security is a really big deal, and we talk a lot about how people are targeted, sometimes because of who they are. And yet we have individuals who think that it's funny to pull pranks, like walking into an airport with a gun, albeit an air rifle. And so I just want to make a public service announcement to our young people out there that it's not funny and it's not a prank. This past weekend, we had something like that occur. I just happened to be up at the airport on Friday evening when a group of young men decided that they were going to pull a prank. It's probably one of the highest security areas in our nation. It's airports, but they thought that this was funny. It occurred to me just the way they were treated, and I started thinking, if this was a different group of people or different ethnicity of people, what would the treatment have been for something that's supposed to be a stupid prank? So, young folks, it's not a prank. There are a lot of people who, for justifiable reasons, are targeted and are under the gun, no pun intended, for trying to harm us as citizens of this country. So don't do stupid things like that. Please don't. I was in there, and my husband was calling me saying, get out of there. There are guys coming in there with a gun. You know, stupid me thinking I should ask them what are they doing instead of going out of there. So it's just my public service announcement. Thank you.
Thank you, Leslie. Frank.
Oh, I do want to add one other thing very quickly, Martha. This past weekend, it was an honor for me and also at the same time for Marcia Ford here in this community, and I want to say congratulations on the record publicly to Marcia for her work in this community as a public servant. You know, her life quote is, I'm not a perfect servant, I'm a public servant, and I really like that, for being honored with the Harriet Tubman Spirit Award by our oldest church, the St. James Amy Zion Church, which is a historic designated church in our community. So Marcia's done a lot of work in this community, really trying to encourage people to strive for all that they can strive for, and doing it with grace and doing it with humility. And so I do want to say congratulations to her. And at the same time, I just felt honored to be in Albany receiving the Harriet Tubman Humanitarian Achievement Award and sitting in the company of... I felt honored to represent Tompkins County because it's been 5 or 6 years since someone from what is considered our region had gotten such an honor. But I felt like when I sat there and listened to the work, I read the work that the other 9 nominees had done, I really felt like a baby in that I haven't even begun to work as yet. These are women who have really been dragging people out of the depths of where they are, taking them to higher ground, and really the work they do really epitomized what Harriet Tubman had been doing. So I really sat there saying, why am I here? But somebody thought I was doing something special. But it was quite an honor and a wonderful, wonderful ceremony. March 10th in New York State, in case people do not know, is the commemorative day for Harriet Tubman. And it's the day that there's been legislation introduced 10 years ago to make it a holiday in honor of Harriet Tubman. That legislation has passed the Assembly, but always gets held up in the Senate. And we're hoping again to bring it forward. And there were senators and assembly people there who spoke about it, and hopefully they will continue to push to make it happen. So, there.
Thank you very much, Leslie. Frank.
Leslie, you just stole my thunder.
I'll take it all back.
I was going to, on behalf of the legislature, congratulate you and you, Marcia, for representing us and representing yourself, and thank you for all the hard work you have done.
I'll still take
it. And it's a well-deserved recognition.
Thank you.
Really.
Thank you. I'll still
but
take
you
it.
Said all that already.
No, I said I didn't. I don't know what I did, but I'll take that.
Pam?
Well, yes, I think that what Leslie was talking about earlier about the passing of some of the matriarchs in the African American community and the importance of their story and it's part of the history of the African American community. I think that your work and Marcia's work is the current version of that story, and I think it's wonderful that you got that kind of recognition. I'm sorry that we didn't have the opportunity to do a congratulatory ad in the program for the event, but. We are very delighted to see that you got that.
Thank you very much for your congrats. And stop it now, really.
So I'll just say what they said. So, thank you so much, Leslie. And a shameless plug, I have tickets for the luncheon on Friday. If anybody hasn't gotten their tickets yet, you can see me afterwards. Thank you.
I was
you.
Told I could go, but I'd have to stay out.
Not at all.
Well, we can make an exception.
No,
you would be welcome to come, Nathan. Anybody here will be welcome to come under the conditions as Leslie has pointed them out for you. So thank you very much. Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Carol Chalk, Chair.
Yeah, there's worse things than being in a room of 350 women, Nathan.
What are they?
Who said that?
Only Peter.
So the Facilities and Infrastructure Committee met on Friday, March 4th. Thank you for passing those two resolutions. I do want to point out the note about the exterior landscaping at the airport. I assume there weren't questions about it, but the contract representing an 11% increase over the old contract was that's 11% over the entire 5 years, so that's about a 2% a year increase. I will note that in conjunction with Government Operations Committee, we will be holding and have issued invitations to stakeholders who've expressed interest in our road preservation, details of our road preservation law. We've asked people to come back with, in particular, with constructive suggestions that will help us as we consider possible changes to revised thresholds. We've asked people to come with specific information about their specific prior projects and how many trucks it took to move how much dirt. We did hear...
Carol, that meeting is when?
Oh, sorry. That is March 29th, Tuesday night, next Tuesday at 5:30 p.m. in the Old Jail conference room.
So for anybody, not just the people who are invited?
Yes. Yes.
Thank you.
We particularly sent letters. may have more to say about that. I want to appreciate... Joe gave us a presentation on his evaluation criteria he's proposing for the Public Works Department reorganization transition plan. We had a nice conversation about that, and he's worked particularly hard on that. How will we know if that is successful? We heard from the airport. Has had to replace a mower, plower, broom piece of equipment a little more quickly than they had expected to. They were able to handle that through their internal funds with just a budget transfer. So they didn't quite get the life of the old mower, plower, broom that they wanted to, but it was just a little bit short and they could handle it. Solid waste, we heard about the specifics of the new facility and site upgrade that is coming and the key dates. Watch in particular for a groundbreaking that we'll be invited to sometime in May or June for the solid waste and recycling center. Also watch for... Barb and her staff are working hard on the bid process for our new the haul and disposal contract, and that will come to the committee in April. That's going to be a biggie, so you'll be hearing more about that in the future. We've asked, I hope the word got to you, Jonathan, that we had another brief discussion about the project labor agreements, and at the end of which we decided to refer it to you for some further, so that you can take your time and be able to comment in the future on where you see that legally for us.
Right. I spoke with the county administrator about that.
Okay. We also heard from Jonathan. Do you have anything to report to us here on the Hanshaw Road? Do you want to say anything about that?
I can, if you like. As you all know, we were successful on the challenge in the Hanshaw Road lawsuit. The court dismissed that. Several people have asked if they will appeal. The answer is I have no idea. That's up to them. I don't believe they would have a great chance of success on appeal, but I never, you know, one never knows that. In the meantime, I know the Highway Department is continuing as they were doing before. They've sent updated maps to each individual property owner and new property descriptions. They have done appraisals on many of those properties, but not all of them yet. The ones that they have done appraisals on, our consultants have met with those people, and we have several agreements already with regard to purchasing the portions. And I expect in the next few weeks the remainder of the appraisals will be done, and at that point our consultants will be able to speak with everyone. There are 97 property owners altogether, and about half of the appraisals have been done, about half have not, and about half the property owners have been spoken with by our consultants. But basically, we're just proceeding as we would otherwise.
Thank you. Any questions for John?
Point of information with John, please.
Go ahead.
John, is that appeal an appeal of right or is it an appeal by permission, since it started in the appellate division?
It's an interesting question, one of which I looked up. I believe that, in my opinion, they need permission to appeal. It's not absolutely clear. I can go through what the statute says, but my opinion, they need to seek permission to appeal, which I think to the layperson wouldn't make a difference, but in terms of the chance of being successful, it's a two-step process instead of a one-step process. You don't have an automatic right to appeal. So if you want to appeal on a case where you don't have an automatic right, you have to apply to the court and explain why they should take your appeal before you can appeal. And it appeals as of right. You could appeal. You just have a right to appeal, so you can appeal automatically. This, as Michael points out, is an unusual case because it started in the appellate division, which is very unusual. So it's a more unusual case, but I looked into it. I believe they would have to get permission to appeal.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jonathan. We talked about the highway engineer position. They are not yet reviewing applications, so there is time if you know people who would be good highway engineers or have other thoughts about where we might engage in more recruitment and advertising. For that position, please get them in. And Bill Sesney also has prepared an inventory of equipment, highway equipment, that is on the website and also in our back office. We want you to bring it out here and hold it up. But it is very nice to as we discuss equipment or as resolutions come to us for purchases, it's nice to know what they look like.
They're photographs.
The photographs, yes. They are photographs and sort of descriptions. We talked with Arel about one of the ways in which we're saving energy in county buildings is to have where we can, the heat automatically turns down after 5 or 5:30. And so I thought that I could report success in the problem of the being cold in this room, because in some cases it's just a matter of pushing a button on the thermostat, the one behind Kathy there. If you're cold, that was initially at the health department building. Has that feature as well. If you're there working after hours, we're saving energy, but you got to know to push the button. I think we haven't quite tackled that problem, so I promise we'll still work on it. And my final matter is that we're happy that the GO committee has promised to lead us to a new name for that building on State Street that will never more be known as the Carpet Bazaar Building. So we look forward to hearing from you on that. I'm happy to have other committee members jump in if you think I've left something out.
Any questions? Jim?
Yeah, I'm not sure you left anything out, but the alleged Carpet Bazaar Building that we now own, I was happy to see as I drove by this evening that some of the fine language written on the side of the building had been erased by our staff, and I appreciate that someone vigilant and was able to do that.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you, Carol. Capital Plan Review Committee, we met on March 10th. I have a couple of things to bring to your attention. One is that Rel and a panel of folks, staff interviewed two, we had four responses to the RFQ regarding the study about the center of government, about the business case for the center of government. Arel interviewed, they interviewed two consultants, and the unanimous choice was Holt Architects. The committee, so Arel presented that to the committee and distributed the draft scope of the work that they'll be, that they proposed to do in response to Arel's RFQ. They will be negotiating the final scope and the cost, and we'll bring that to us at the next meeting. The scope includes a presentation, a final presentation to the committee and also to the full legislature. So you'll be brought up to date directly on what their report is. We've been looking at space in several, in our downtown buildings, as you know. We talked about the Human Services Building at some length. In particular, the Credit Union, which occupies 640 square feet on the first floor of the Human Services Building. Thanks to Jackie Kippola, Anita Fitzpatrick, and Joe Mariano, we had information pulled together about the history of that agreement, and the committee directed Joe to start talking to the credit union about alternative locations. There are a number of members, employee groups, quite a number that where the employees are part of the credit union. We've been providing space at no cost since 1970-something, 78? Roughly, okay, forgot the exact date, for quite some time. There are other employee groups, as I said, that are members, and it may be, we're hoping that there may be another location for that small but important facility, and so we'll be, that might be an issue for the Council of Governments to discuss because most of the members are municipalities. The reason that it matters is that when we look at exiting the old library, we're really looking hard at bringing the programs in from the old library, the probation and family treatment court programs, into the Human Services Building for the sake of efficiency, adjacency, so people who are working on the same issues and with similar clients can work more easily, more effectively, and especially to save costs, as opposed to finding additional replacement space somewhere else for family treatment court and day reporting. So every square inch really is important in that building. So that's why we were looking at the credit union space, and we also started talking about the Beverly Livesey room. Arel worked with LaBelle Associates on an initial work with the day reporting program, the probation department, on what are the space needs for day reporting. And all things considered, it looks as though if we use Beverly Livesey, and if we use the credit union space and perhaps part of the mailroom, that it's not a slam dunk, but it's physically possible that those functions can be brought into the Human Services Building. The question of taking over the Livesey room is a touchy one. It's a very heavily used community meeting space. It's used by our departments in that building for training and meetings as well. Department heads meet over there. So we are concerned about that. It is true, however, though, that the COFA building, for temporarily I call it the COFA building, will have meeting space added into their into that footprint. Probably won't be as big as the Livesey room, but definitely will be additional, you know, some replacement meeting functions, you know, space for those functions. It is recognized, the committee recognized, that nothing is going to be perfect. We cannot afford perfect. So we need to look at all options, and I think it was taken as good news that with work, with dedication by the staffs involved and Arel, that we may be able to solve this problem and get those programs out of the old library without having to build something new or lease a different space, et cetera. So it's also likely, I mean, the COFA building will be developed, that meeting space will be available before anything would happen to the Livesey room, so we wouldn't have a timing problem there. So the committee did vote to adopt by voice vote to approve the idea of going ahead with a further study by Libella at a cost not to exceed $8,000, and we'll have a special meeting before our next legislature meeting to formally adopt a resolution. We will send it to the budget committee, I think, on March 28th, so that budget and the full committee will have a chance to look at the resolution and then bring it to the legislature on April 7th. This seems Arel estimated that between $5,000 and $8,000 would be sufficient, and Libella would be, since they've already put a lot of work into developing the program and studying the human services building, they'd be the logical people just to take it that final step and do some closer design development on how these programs would fit into the human services building. So it's a big step. We've been talking about it for some time, what to do with the programs in the old library. So I really appreciate the work that's been done. The departments, the youth services, social services, and probation, taking this really seriously and understanding that everybody's going to have to be flexible and creative about making this work. But it's our hope that'll be able to be done. As far as renovating carpet, the COFA building, Arel will be bringing to the committee he'll be finalizing the request for proposals to do design development on the renovations to that building. We also talked about the capital plan. This is, you know, the name of the committee is Capital Plan Review. Well, this year is the time when Ed will be thoroughly reviewing the 20-year capital plan. So we talked about the process for doing that. What are the issues he'll be looking at? One issue is financing, and so we will be asking David Squires to come in and talk to us about the schedule of our bond commitments and how we're going to handle future capital needs as we enter an especially constrained fiscal environment. So that's my report on the committee. Pam Peter Bryan.
Yeah, I have a real concern about our eliminating the Beverly Livesey room. You know, I think that that room is used just all the time. And the elimination of public space in downtown with the demolition of the Women's Community Building and this, it feels as if we are not responsible for creating public space. I understand that. But I think that when we take over property that is on the tax rolls and take it off the tax rolls for the city, what we add is, we're moving our people around. But I really think public space is important for all members of the county, and I really think this is not a good idea.
We talked about that at some length, and I'll if I could mention a comment that Mike made at the committee that this might be a relatively short-term problem if we are indeed moving towards a center of government, which I didn't update you on the courthouse, the Office of Court Administration's demands for the space that we are in right now. But it feels very much so that the train is moving towards getting us out of this room, these spaces. So we have to be honest about that. When, if at such point as we replace space for the legislature and all the other things that, the consolidations that we may be looking at, meeting space will certainly be a very important part of the program for that building. So, as I said, it's not perfect. It also could be possible that the Livesey Room, as adapted for day reporting, might be able to be organized so that it could be used after hours or even after 2 o'clock by other groups. Day reporting only goes till 2 o'clock or 1:30, and that's something that we asked them to consider as they look at this. Peter, and then Brian.
I'd like to echo what Pam just said, and it occurred to me as you were talking. One thing I do know that there is a lack of public space in the city of Ithaca. I've had run across that problem, particularly handicapped accessible public space. That makes it even worse. But I wonder if we could think about helping with that problem with the COFA Bazaar. I mean, we're not, COFA's not going to, I'm sorry, I like the sound of that, okay? COFA Bazaar is not going to use all of the space that's in that building. And I just wonder what it would cost us to develop some of the remaining space. And obviously that wouldn't necessarily be forever. Into public space at the moment, almost irrespective of what we do about the Livesey Room, but certainly that would answer the problem. But in any case, I think it might be something to think about as sort of a contribution that we could make to the community.
Joe, you're leaning towards the microphone.
Well, I think we've talked. I think we've talked about this. There is the prospect of another occupant of the other half of that building. It's basically in the not-for-profit sector right now, who has an interest in taking space and basically paying us rent for that space on the other side of the building. I think what we've talked about is, can you take two tenants, COFA and tenant number two, and create a conference facility in between those two tenants? I think Martha talked about that, which would not be as large as the Livesey Room, but would still be on par with perhaps the old jail, the expanded old jail conference room.
I have
half the size, yes.
And I would just say, we can't afford, when we're looking at the dollars that we're going to have available to us in the coming budget, as I said, we really can't afford perfect. So I know this is a tough issue. I know we're very used to using the Livesey Room a lot, but it's something that we have to take seriously. I've got Brian, then Will, then Dooley, and Carol.
Just Joe basically answered my question, was that I wasn't aware that we had another tenant, and if we don't have somebody nailed down, it's kind of tough to send out a RFP for space configuration and allotment and stuff when you don't know who's going to be in there. But if it sounds pretty firm that's going to be there, that answered my question. And I don't have a suggestion for the name of that building. However, I don't think we ought to call it what Peter just said.
Can I ask for a vote?
Yes, we do have. We are in negotiations with another tenant, and so Will.
Just very quickly, I want to thank Pam and Peter. I completely agree. I will feel very uncomfortable supporting elimination of that space unless we can come up with comparable space. Given, you know, it is just, it is not our primary function. We have a first duty to address our own departmental needs, but I think loss of that space is critical importance to our community. So it's not something we should be doing casually.
I promise you, this hasn't been casual. All right, Dooley? Carol and Leslie and then Pam?
Yeah, I was just wondering that the Human Services Coalition had did some really fine work a number of years ago sort of documenting the availability of meeting space, mm-hmm. and that's available. And, you know, they do a really fine job of coordinating over various needs, and I just wonder if this is something that we could ask them to tackle as part of their upcoming, you know, work on behalf of the county, through the support that we give them as a county, just to look into what the options are and the ways in which various agencies in town could pool resources, find grant money, put together a package that would involve us as a partner. But, it, I mean, it just is something that that we could tackle as a community, not necessarily feel compelled to tackle it for the community.
There's they have a space inventory, I think they call it, and you can get a hard copy. I think it's also on their website. It does list it. Church rooms, a lot of different spaces that are available. Leslie?
I just want to agree with Pam, Peter, and Will, and especially when Peter mentions the availability of handicap accessible space. That is so crucial, and I really hope that we don't go in the direction of eliminating that space.
I've got you, Mike, Pam, and then Mike.
Yeah, one of the things I think you'll find, Carol, in that report was that there isn't a lot of space, and there isn't a lot of large space in downtown Ithaca. I actually have a question about, I know that the Capital Committee, Plan Review Committee, has taken a lot of stuff on, but I don't know that I would like this decision to be made by that committee. What was the vote on that committee that supported that? And I think that that should be a decision that is brought back here.
Well, the decision was just simply to encourage staff to look at this, to figure out how to, I mean.
Well, you were talking about that it was a decision that was made, and this is a tough decision, and that I don't quite understand then what you're saying.
On motion, we approved the idea of going into design development, basically, up to $5,000 to $8,000, and a resolution will be, you know, this was a discussion that led to this vote. The resolution will be written, and it will go through the budget committee, and then come back to capital plan. We'll have a special meeting before the next legislature. There was a vote.
Yeah,
but
and what
it's
was
not,
the vote?
Well, of the four members who are there, unanimous. So it was a vote to study this. It's not a vote to do it. It's a vote to see how this could be done. And let me remind you that we, in previous reports I've made, we spent time and money thoroughly analyzing the mental health building and the human services building to see was there extra space. And there is there's none in mental health unless we were to kick out the Alcohol and Drug Council, and about 2,000 unassigned feet in human services building, but on upper floors. And from the point of view of bringing these programs in, I mean, this legislature has voted to exit the old library. That was a previous vote that we have taken, that to direct staff to work on moving the programs out of the old library. You know how long it took for us to find space for COFA, so and how much money we're spending on that. So it seems at this point this was something that it's not a done deal. This is to be studied. Staff is going to work on this. And the resolution just for the study is what we're talking about bringing.
But in
back
the
here.
Study, is there a description of using that room, of dividing that, of taking up that space? Is that going to be part of it? I mean, was that the agreement of the committee to do that?
the idea is to study how could, you know, could this be done? And obviously then,
and so
should
that's
it
the
be
only
done
option.
Is a separate decision.
Yeah, it's the only option. But will there then, if it will be done, is that will that be brought back to the legislature then?
Well, of course. Mike, did you want to add in?
Okay.
Yeah, I'd like to get in on this a little bit. You know, there's lots of communities in our county that would like the county to set up some meeting space that would be inexpensive, and certainly that's what we have down here. Maybe the city of Ithaca needs to put that on its agenda, or the Downtown Business Association needs to put that on its agenda to try to find space downtown for public meetings. It's not the county's fault that the Women's Community Building isn't going to exist anymore if that gets torn down. There has been space added. The town of Ithaca has put in meeting space. We have the space at the Tompkins County Public Library, the Borg Warner Room. Right now, these are pretty hard times. To lose space, a meeting space, is not a nice idea, but it may be temporary that we will add space in the future. But the county has to have its operations, and we have to think about, instead of to leave that space open for free meeting for somewhere, that we are going to have to then pay rent somewhere else, and maybe high rent, for these programs that have to be moved out. I think we need to think long and hard about this. I think the Capitol Committee had a long discussion about it, and we moved ahead to say, let's look at this. Is it possible? And that's all.
Okay. Thank you, Mike. Dooley?
I probably shouldn't have passed earlier. CPR did have a serious discussion. Not everyone was equally enthusiastic about the possibility of using the Beverly Hills Conference Room space as is being studied as part of the closer look to see whether there is enough theoretical space in the Human Services Building to accommodate the program Martha was talking about. With respect to the, but studying it, it does not seem unreasonable to me. So the committee did agree unanimously that it could be studied. The idea that the possible co-tenant in the Human Service Building annex that we've purchased could share a conference room space with COFA is real, but what we learned at the CPR meeting was that, as Joe tagged on to his comment, the space would be maybe half the size of the Beverly Lipsy room, and that the room would actually be heavily used by both COFA and the possible new tenant, so that it would not be really much available during the day for meetings. So that's the additional information I had.
Thank you, Dooley. Frank?
And to add to Dooley's comment, my recollection at the meeting was that one of the possibilities, and it's just a study possibility, was to petition the Bevlivzy room. So they were talking about using it for classroom space. And then when it wasn't being used, it was a scheduling item so that it could be used for community as it is now. So as Dooley has already said, there's nothing carved in stone. It's just simply a look. But I think everybody that I've heard from anyway has the same concern you do, Pam, mm-hmm. about a limited space in the community. But we have to weigh it with what Mike said, too. And as long as we're considering naming opportunities for our newest building, I'd like to amend Peter's, and I'm glad he's coming back in. Peter, I'm going to throw out a different name for that building. Instead of the COFA Bazaar, I'd like to offer the COFA Cabana.
I yield to my
comment. Wow. We clearly have a lot of talent here. Okay. Wow. Carol?
That's
going to
be hard to beat.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think it's really scary that in these tough times, it's clearly we're going to be reduced to scrabbling. No, we're going to be reduced to scrabbling over space, and it's pretty scary. And again, I would urge us to think of ways that we can work together as a community. Some thoughts, I'm just tossing these out. They may be horrible ideas, but one is it might be good to start with at least some analysis down on paper of who's using the space for how much time, how much of the week is it used, and who's doing that. That might be helpful. Daytime, nighttime. To maybe look into, as you do the analysis, what could we build into a budget as we go to renovate and move things around? What would we be willing to build into a budget that would be part of a community effort among those who need meeting space to make something happen in a joint way, of which we would be one player? So it's just ideas I'm tossing out in hopes that we can stimulate ideas about how to do this together rather than at odds with each other. And again, it would need probably a coordinator. And I do think an appropriate coordinator might be to at least ask the Human Services Coalition if they'd be willing to take it on, or if other people have other suggestions, maybe to pass along to Capital Review Committee about who would be appropriate, if not them.
All right, Jim, and then Dave, and then I'm going to say have something to say.
You know, I appreciate everything I've heard here, but it feels like the Budget Committee in the fall, there's the point in every meeting I've said before when everything kind of goes awry, and I feel like it's going awry right now. And, you know, please return the focus.
Well, Dave, and then me.
Just a thought. I don't know if there's any available room at the TC3 offsite campus. They have several rooms that would be fine for meetings, but whether it's available, I don't know. We'd have to see about that. And I'm going to put in my bid for the building name, TABS, the Aging Building on State.
I am not sure who's collecting those naming ideas, but send them in. I will, I think, as certainly as part of this decision, we will bring you information on what the Human Services Coalition list already includes. What other spaces might be added. TC3 is a good idea. I'm not sure whether our Brown Road spaces are included on their inventory, but I've personally been at three different meetings at three different spaces that we have created for daytime meetings that I believe anybody can ask for and use. I'm not sure whether nighttime access is possible, but those are spaces that we have designed and paid for and made available to non-county groups. As I said, this is a really hard decision, and obviously the space in the COFA building will be fully accessible. We can also urge the staff to be, as they develop the renovation plan, to be as generous as possible on the meeting space. And if that means squeezing the other two functions a little bit, maybe that's a choice that we will direct be done. So that design is obviously not set in stone at all. So I appreciate your comments. I think Beverly Libsy should feel honored by everybody's by the importance. Now, the room is very important. We understand that. And certainly communicate to Arel what the issues are that have been raised. All right, that is my report. Unless there's anything else. Thank you. Now we went way past our typical break time. I thought we might be able to keep going. Let's keep going. We do have an executive session to break for. Governor Operations Committee, Mike Lane, Chair.
With respect to naming, I'm not going to offer a suggestion. I'm just going to say that we do have a policy on naming. The Government Operations Committee will be reviewing that, and if anybody wants to make their suggestions known to the committee in the form of whatever, we'll probably eventually come back with a resolution of some kind, and you can vote it up or down or amend it. We had a special meeting scheduled for March 7th, but unfortunately we got a little bit of snow that day, and we had to basically not go forward with that. That was to try to come to conclusion on the memorandum on the redistricting that we've been working on. So we're pushing that over to our next meeting, which will be this Thursday at 9:30. We've added an hour if we need it to be able to accommodate that discussion. The meeting about the road law was mentioned by Carol Chalk on her report. There are copies of the letter that went out to all of the folks who had participated in one way or the other, either had come to the public hearing, the public meeting, or had given us written comments, about 30 of them. This was generated basically at the behest of people like our own Frank Proto, who thought it would be a good idea if we had some of the folks that have an interest in this come in and talk to us about possible revisions of the law. And so we thought that was a good idea, and that's what's going forward. I want to say one thing about minutes. You have a new version of minutes in your packet tonight. I'm sure it's not going to be perfect in everybody's view. We aren't done with this policy. The policy has been circulated to legislators and department heads and others, and we're getting comments back. We'll be talking about those. There will be adjustments to these in the future, but we're starting down this path, and we want to try the idea of the action-only minutes with the notes being kept in a separate location.
Thank you, Mike. Any questions? Brian.
Mike, thank you for the road law review team and the opportunity for you and Carol to sort of lead that. Is the draft of the original proposed local law that we were dealing with a month or so ago, is that up on the county's website, so that if any of these folks you've invited...
I can't answer that question. I don't know whether that original draft is up there. I would think it was, since it was on the agenda.
It's still attached to the agenda, yes.
So if one of these folks that wants to come to that meeting will have could they have access to it?
Yes.
They need it? Okay. The other is the redistricting committee. Can you say anything about, I was just reading minutes somewhere about your committee's been discussing that committee's composition? And
no, not the composition of the committee.
The number.
We have a memorandum that we're reviewing on what the committee would look like and what the charge to that committee might be. Where it's a recommendation from the Government Operations Committee to the full legislature.
So is there a number, is it more than 20 that you want to have on the committee, on the commission?
On the committee, you know, at a previous discussion, I think we took a vote to recommend a committee of 9.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mike. Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee, Pam Mackesy, Chair.
Thank you, Martha. The Planning Committee met on Wednesday, March 2nd. One of the things that we was on the consent agenda tonight, but it's one of those things that kind of get, we don't always pay attention to it, but it shows this county is always trying to figure out the best way to do things, and it's what I'm talking about in particular is the resolution that we passed applying for a grant or making our contribution to a grant. We actually have the money, the federal and state money, to do a regional transportation study. This is an incredibly exciting possibility. Included in this group who are talking to about this is Tioga, Schuyler, Seneca, Cayuga, Cortland, Broome, and Chemung counties. We have so much traffic that it comes into the county to work in Tompkins County. We would be doing ourselves and our roads a tremendous favor if we could get a lot of these cars off the road, and we would provide public transportation. So this is an idea. I know that TC3, Carl Haynes, he has helped pull this together, and it is a very exciting possibility. We already have one of the premier transportation systems. For our size, we carry more people than many other facilities that are larger than us. So the idea of expanding that and including all of these other counties is a very exciting idea. I wanted to spend a second on the we also did on the consent agenda the tourism awards. We have two groups of awards that were given. One is to help people, organizations develop marketing plans and capacity building. And that group of recipients included the Hangar Theater, the Cayuga Chamber Orchestra, Kitchen Theater, Cayuga Nature Center, the History Center, PRI, which is Museum of the Earth, State Theater, and Science Center. And so those are all good, solid organizations in our county that we are working to help keep strong. And then the Capital Grants Committee provided money for, this is for capital projects for organizations in the county, the Cayuga Nature Center Capital Improvements for Enhanced Programming, the Science Center for they're going to do a Marcella Shale exhibit, and then the Social Ventures Thames Skate Park at the renovation of that skate park, which has been shown that people who go to skateboard parks, they will travel, stay in hotels, and spend their money at those locations. So that is all great stuff. And then we have we had another discussion on the possibility of a wind farm in Enfield, and there's interest in getting the county to at least write a letter saying that we would be interested in, if it's feasible, whatever, to be part of that. That's all. We're still at very preliminary stages, but it's something that people are asking for our support to develop our sustainable energy sources in Tompkins County. And that's my report. I have one resolution. I have resolution M, appropriation from general fund balance, allocating funding for multifamily housing market study, and I so move.
Is there a second? Leslin seconds that.
Yeah. I forgot to mention that that this is a was begun by the Downtown Business Association. They want to look at multifamily housing, the need, what the demand will be in the area, and it seemed like we could piggyback on that without a tremendous amount of money and make it countywide instead of just the city of Ithaca, because I think it's the kind of information that we all our communities would find useful in their development of and looking at their housing needs for the future, and that was what we are passing right now.
Any questions? All right, this is a short form roll call. Hold on. Question?
Yeah, no, it's not a question. I just I tried to raise my hand but Charlie Troutman slipped out. I just wanted to thank him for showing up and patiently sitting there for about an hour to answer our questions, and obviously would have had to sit there even longer. He worked with us at great length about the questions that we had on the Science Center application, so just wanted to thank him.
If it hadn't gone through on consent, I would have moved that up. Yeah, I know he was there.
Frank.
I got one question. Joe, on the, or maybe David, on the, in the resolve, the appropriation, the money is already in the general fund balance and we're moving it to program expense?
This is from really the planning department's certified rollover that is there, has been confirmed in the withdrawal from that.
Thank you.
Ready to vote? All right, roll call.
Ms. Chalk?
Sorry. Ready just to vote? Yes.
Short roll call.
Yes.
Ms. Chalk?
Yes.
Mr. Burbank?
Yes.
Would anyone like to wish to be recorded as no? That's unanimous. Thank you very much. Is that it, Pam?
Yes, thank you.
All right, thank you. Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee.
Thank you. Mr. Troutman told me he was freezing and he had to go. And I want to make a suggestion that I heard about during that long discussion about the temperature in here and things, and if we hurried through the agenda, we could get through before the heat goes down. The Budget Committee meeting...
All the hot air that's created, I don't know.
It doesn't help, Pam, trust me. The Budget Committee met the other afternoon for about 45 minutes prior to the Public Safety Committee. Passed a few resolutions that were covered in other committees, and I think the most important thing coming out of it is that County Administrator talked again somewhat about the $1.3 million deficit we may have and what the next 45 to 60 days look like in the county's perspective as the budget hopefully gets passed, and then we have to make mid-course correction over that period of time. He has sent out information to department heads and received things back about suggestions they could make or have made about how they can help us in our financial situation as it moves forward. So I think that was the premier thing that was talked about, and I say that for all of you to keep in mind that that's something we undoubtedly will have to do as we move forward. And that concludes my report.
Okay. Any questions for Jim? Kathy?
This is more of a general comment. It's not related to any specific committee. It's actually really related to all the committees. And I'd like to ask my colleagues and the staff if we could start taking into consideration, because I've noticed a trend of, and it's perfectly legitimate in these trying times that we would need to set up special committee meetings. However, at times, just sitting around the table and asking people, will this work for you, isn't, for some of us, the optimal way to be able to attend these special committee meetings, because sometimes we have work obligations that we can't necessarily predict at that moment. So I'd just like to ask for some consideration in setting these meetings of perhaps going through staff and asking staff to check in with staff and committee members so that those of us who have job obligations, particularly during the day, can make an effort to be able to, if necessary, rearrange our schedules, but without this odd ad hoc setting of meetings, because it does make it pretty difficult for some of us that aren't professionals and able to just step away from our desks.
Anything else? Dave.
I've got a question for Pam. Is there any information on the census?
Well, you know, it's the big promise. I don't know what's going to happen after that actually comes out, because the anticipation has become so incredible that I think we're up to 200,000 myself.
I heard 210. Okay.
All right. Anything else for the budget? No. Thank you, Jim. I assume we're all set with O and P, having passed them already. We have the minutes of the March 1st meeting.
Should I officially withdraw those?
Kathy, yes.
I'd like to withdraw O and P.
All right. Thank you very much. All right. Minutes of the previous meeting, March 1st, going to get a motion. Leslie moves. Or a second? Will seconds. All in favor? Dooley and then Kathy.
It was interesting to read these. I seem to be reduced to cliches. Last time I talked about minutes, I talked about throwing the baby out with the bathwater. This time I use the phrase, these don't seem either fish or fowl. They are not action-only minutes. They include a lot of stuff that isn't action, and yet when you read what was passed by the legislature, it calls for action-only minutes on packet page 29. It says, shall include only resolutions, motions proposed, and actions taken. And then under the next resolve, it talks about of these notes, only action items will be presented for approval. So there are content statements about, for example, what the chair said and reported, what the county administrator reported, what every committee chairman talked about, and way beyond action-only stuff. And so I'm in the odd position, although I don't agree with the guidelines that were adopted at our last meeting, I can't vote to approve these because they don't follow those guidelines. That's my comment.
Kathy, and then Peter.
Thank you. I applaud the committee's effort to figure out a way to implement an actual policy to address our problem with the minutes. I agree with Julie, they're not action only, but I heard what Mike said, we're trying to do something. I can't attend the meetings of the GO because they occur at 8:30 in the morning, but I hear what he says about we're moving towards something. I did advise y'all that I wouldn't be voting for the minutes until we actually adopt a policy, and so that's why I'm voting against them.
Peter?
I think what Julie says is patently clear. I think this is not the right place to discuss it, and I would like to move to refer these minutes to the GO committee to ask them to, what? Yeah, the minutes, to see, to develop a better set of guidelines for the people that write them up. And we'll never get away from it if we don't do that.
It's been a motion to refer these minutes to committee.
That's ridiculous.
Is there a second? That fails for lack of a second. Or anything else on these minutes? Pass. What? I'm sorry?
I just would say, I think I'm correct in saying this. Correct me if I'm wrong, Mike, but I think it's the intention, our intention to work closely with Kathy and whoever else we need to consult with to implement the policy that we voted, or the procedure that we voted on at our last meeting. And I think we're very aware that we're not there yet with this set of minutes, but that certainly staff is going to need some time to figure out how to do what it is that we're asking them to do. And I'd just like to ask everybody to kind of bear with us as we get to that place where they reflect what we voted on.
Are we ready to vote on the minutes? All in favor of the minutes as presented in your packets, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Opposed? 1, 2, 3. The minutes passed 12 to 3. Thank you to the staff for the minutes. Can I get a motion to go into executive session to discuss negotiations? I do not think we will take any action on coming out of the meeting, out of executive session. Moved by Will, seconded by Jim. All in favor of executive session? Any opposed? All right, we're in executive session. We'll take a break until 25-0.